All right, we'll call the Community Development Committee meeting to order Tuesday, November 12th, 5:15.
Oh, that was Community Development.
Rick Fagerly.
Yeah, Rick.
That's the one we're in.
I thought it was Labor.
That's the one I run late an hour.
You want to say who you are, Sean?
Who am I supposed to be here now?
Sean Meskey.
We're in this one.
Okay.
Are you supposed to be here?
Yeah, I think maybe. I don't know.
Say your name.
Julie Osmus.
Sarah Sundberg. Lynn Foldis. Vicki Davis.
Dave Ramstead.
No one here from the public to speak. Item three, agreement between the City of Wilmer and Mid-Minnesota Development Commission.
Thank you, Chair, committee members. We have an agreement between the city and Mid-Minnesota downstairs. And it is for to develop the city's new comprehensive plan, which establishes a 20-year guideline for timing and sequence of adoption of official controls to ensure planned, orderly, and staged development and redevelopment. An update should be prepared about every 10 years. The City of Wilmer's previous comp plan was adopted in 2009, which was also contracted with Mid-Minnesota. The agreement is divided into two phases. The first phase is the data mining effort to create maps, tables, and graphs. And the second phase is to then take the foundation of information with council approval to form a comp plan task force, and so they can start the ground running. After the phase one data mining, and we've created the foundational documents, we will come back to committee, like I mentioned, and then on to council to get approval to get the task force formed. Phase one, which is the data mining and doc creation, is a not-to-exceed bid of $13,600. And the phase two, which will be to develop the remainder of documents and to work with the task force, planning commission, SARA, subcommittees, and various stakeholders, and even community meetings. And that will be $18,700 for a total of $32,300. That cost is going to be borne by the building permit fees that we received this year. We had a pretty good year, and we also did not budget for Tom getting his state designation, which also created a windfall. So it should be entirely covered by that. So I'm seeking a motion from this committee for the city to enter an agreement with Mid-Minnesota so that we may start the data mining and document creation.
Any questions?
So don't we move in second?
Oh, that's true. Your motion to approve it?
So moved.
Okay, second?
Second.
Any questions?
This is a general one. First, I will say that I have been a member of MMDC for many, many years. And so I don't know if I don't believe I have a conflict of interest, but I represent Ridgewater College on that commission. I can tell you they do these types of comprehensive plans all the time for a number of cities, and no one ever seems to come back and yell at the commission when it's done. So I think they must do a good job. My question is this something we have to have a third party do? Is that a normal process? Because I know other cities do it. Is that something, are there some cities that do that themselves, or is this a normal process?
Well, it's very typical because it's very labor intensive. Not just in creating the document and all the supporting information, but also having all the community meetings, the subcommittee meetings. I mean, it's so much information and decision making that it's just way too much for a single planner or myself to do. The last one was done with Mid-Minnesota. They pretty much did the entire thing, and they did it in an isolated manner. It was not done through a task force or through committees or through public involvement, which is what we're going to do, which is the norm again. Also, the document was a quarter of this size.
Okay.
This was a scoping document that I created, and so it's going to be about four times larger. It's going to address far more in depth, and at the end of each section we're hoping to incorporate revised and new ordinances, which will actually make the document actionable. So we want to kind of do that as we go, not get them adopted, but get the ordinances incorporated in there, and then also present them to committee and council in chunks, similar to what Sam did with the employment document.
Any other questions? I have a motion to approve this, send to the council. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say no. That carries.
Thank you.
All right. Number four, department update. Or do you want Sarah to go on Main Street?
Well, mine is pretty quick, and then I'll let Sarah run with it. To date, we've had 656 permits. Permit fees are over $400,000. And our total estimated values are $51 million worth of development this year. And we still have about 6 weeks to go. The breakdown as of this past 2 weeks, because I make it, it's not for the whole year. But for the last 2 weeks, currently our retail commercial represents about 6% of our permits. Institutional represents about 29% of our permits. Industrial, about 45%. And multifamily housing, about 20%, which is a really good mix. And currently, you know, kind of on the note with the comp plan, Sarah's working on an overlay with EDC on coming up with a map on available lots. And she is also thinking about some overlays that we can do there for incentives that we can bounce off of a committee to see if any of them are realistic or just going too far, and then maybe take some of those to council. So we're kind of in mid-stride there, and with that, I will pass the next step to Sarah.
So you're staying busy.
Yes. Yes, staying busy.
It's good work for it. Yes. Remember at the beginning of this last year, about this time last year, we were awarded an Artist on Main Street grant through Minnesota Main Street, and we became eligible for that because we are a designated Main Street community and have the Wilmer Main Street program. And so we were awarded $30,000 over 3 years for this program. This first year, we spent $20,000, and I'm happy to report that every single penny of that will be spent. And next year we'll look at $10,000, and we're actually in the process of receiving additional funding from the Community Foundation already to bump us back up to that same amount, hopefully. That being said, I thought all of our projects have completed at this time, and so I wanted to come back and just give a fun little recap of everything that we've done, and as we start planning for 2020 and our next round of projects. So as an overall program, Artists on Main Street will involve 11 communities over the 4 years. It's funded through the Bush Foundation, and the main kind of leading partners are Rethos, which is where Minnesota Main Street is housed, previously known as Preservation Alliance of Minnesota, and Springboard for the Arts. And that Springboard piece got pulled in because we're working directly with artists, and they have a great team that has that knowledge and that capacity. Through this program, we've built this community cohort of these 11 communities, soon to be 11 communities. We receive project funds, and really it's artist-led problem solving, which is the fun component of it. An overall structure each year. So what we've gone through this year, we address our challenge at the very beginning of the year. We hold some training for the community to talk about creative placemaking and spark interest for that program to get some of those submittals and projects, project proposals sent in to us. We have a committee kind of behind this tied to Wilmer Main Street, and so they were our approval board, if you will, to make sure that the proposals, we try and fund everything that we get. There were two that we did not fund just because they just weren't quite ready yet. But in talking with them this next year, it sounds like they've been kind of doing some behind the scenes work and they're excited for a second shot at it, which is exciting and fun to talk to them about. This past summer, we've been in that implementation period, and then now we're kind of in the recap phase. So we've been contracting with a business started out of KCEO last year, the high school entrepreneur class, to create a video. So they've been documenting the process the whole way, so I'm excited to see their artistic interpretation of this past year. We are working on an open house celebration. We'll talk about that at the end. Impact stories, all of that kind of stuff. So we're in that phase right now of recapping and telling stories. So going back way to the beginning of the year, our challenge was to create more visible, frequent, everyday gathering spaces that were conducive to and celebrated a variety of ages, cultures, and backgrounds in downtown. And we talked about, we've got a lot of really great big events. We've got WomanFest, we've got Celebrate Art, Celebrate Coffee, and all of these other things that draw thousands of people downtown, but we want to create that everyday energy around downtown and that excitement for being down there. So then we held our trainings in March, and we had about 30 people in attendance between the two trainings. We held one at the Barn Theater in the Nancy Geiger kind of event center space there, and then we held one at the African Development Center as well. And we were really, really pleased to see as much interest and interaction during those times. I did include in your packet just a quick recap of some of the things that we talked about in that training. And some of my favorite pieces that they include in that, it's led by Minnesota Main Street and Springboard for the Arts, but they talk about placemaking being the act of people coming together to change overlooked and undervalued public and shared spaces into welcoming places where communities gather, support one another, and thrive. And places can be animated and enhanced by elements that encourage human interaction, from temporary activities such as performances and chalk poetry, to permanent installations such as landscaping and unique art. And that's kind of the creative placemaking tends to be a buzzword these days, but it's important to have kind of that baseline. And that kind of stems to some of the core principles. These are actually, a majority of them are core principles of Springboard for the Arts, but we found that they really aligned with the program as a whole and the efforts that they're trying to accomplish through this large partnership with the Bush Foundation. And so the core principles that they have for this work are to define artists broadly. So like they talked about in the last thing, it might be a theater production, it might be a mural, it might be just creating some of that gathering space. Art and creatives is a very broad term. We work with local artists. We don't bring in the experts per se. We've got plenty of great talent here, and we want to capitalize on that. We work from existing assets, celebrating what we have again, collaborating across sectors, so building that capacity to see artists and the art world as another player at the table and a powerful force that they are. Giving people a common cause, so creating that challenge that they're all working towards, providing simple mechanisms, so breaking down barriers, making it easy for everyone to be involved. Small and mini is one of the big things that they also push, but these aren't going to be your big grand $15,000 events. These are going to be a very neighborhood, community-oriented, maybe 100 people are in attendance, and that's wildly successful kind of a thing. And it allows artists to really test out and experiment with some new things and really draw connection to their community in the making. Building lasting relationships, and finally paying artists, so that financial component is huge for this. So the fun part, the implementing. We funded 13 different projects, and we spent the full $15,000 was for the artists directly, so we all received a chunk of that money, and $5,000 was for administrative costs for various marketing efforts and celebration we'll talk about and different things like that. They're not in particular order, but I thought we would just kind of walk through, and I can touch on a couple of the kind of fun things that came out of each one. So the first one we have on our list is the Amazing Masks, Faces of Wilmer project. This was done by Nikki Bedger Erickson, and she's a special ed teacher at Dream Technical Academy now. She put together this three-part class, so she partnered with the Barn Theater and with Community Ed, so it was advertised in their kind of booklet that goes out every year. So it was really fun to see. She had a great mix of people of all ages and backgrounds and socioeconomic status, and just working side by side and seemingly not really paying attention to all of those differences, but having fun expressing themselves through mask making. And it was a new kind of art form for her to experiment and teach, which she hadn't done before. And she wrote in her final report that she looks really forward to continuing this and kind of implementing it into some of the more theatrical and performance-based stuff that she does on a more regular basis. So that was fun to see her connection with all of that.
So did they each do their own and then took those home, or did they go up someplace?
They they were displayed the front, on the very front of this, this background picture, instead of the final masks. So they were displayed at the Barn Theater. And then she has asked that they have them at home right now, I believe, but if there is somebody that wants to have a display, that they'd be available for the next year in case somebody else wants to display them for a time being. She did hire a couple people to help her, so again, you know, paying everybody that's involved with these, and it was a free class to attend for those that participated. The Downtown Mural Medallion, Kristen Allen is working at PFF. In town, and they work with people of all different abilities. And so she put together, this was a smaller portion of the larger project, but they had 8 different murals that they painted on canvas, and it was a paint by number, so it made it very accessible for anybody at Rockin' Robins to come up and paint and be a part of making the mural itself. And then the canvases will actually be hung on buildings throughout downtown and throughout Wilmer in general. So the portion that this project paid for the murals that will be on display downtown, and I know for sure one will be on Frida's, which will be a really fun spot right there on Highway 12. I think the one thing that we always talk about with this project when we get together as a cohort is the accessibility of bringing these murals to people, this community mural to people, rather than expecting a bunch of people to show up at a specific place on a specific day at a specific time, but rather kind of finding where that critical mass of people is and engaging them in this art. The next project was called Trace, and Andrew Nordine and Lisa Berg both, they actually work in Hutchinson, but they're what I would call probably professional artists. They've been doing art for a very long time. But this gave them the opportunity to transform a project that they started a while back called the Traveling Museum, which is essentially a fish house that they transformed into literally a traveling museum. So they'll have art hanging up and bring it to shows in the cities or wherever it might be. But they covered the whole thing in whiteboards on the inside and invited people to come in and leave their mark. And so they were at Touch a Chuck, and they were at a couple other pop-up events that happened downtown this past summer. And it was really fun to see the younger kids seem to really just charge right in there and check it out, whereas other people were a little bit more hesitant at first. And it was cool to see some of the different components that they brought in. They hired a couple translators to have there. Some high school kids and different things that just really made it feel a little bit more welcoming to come in, and perhaps some familiar faces. And they talked a lot about, and we've debriefed a lot afterwards about how do you not just make participating accessible, but how do you break down the barrier of people not really knowing how to interact with the art itself, and that idea of like, should I step into this space? Should I not? How do I interact with this? And so that was a really interesting conversation to have with them. Also on that page is the Living Decay project with the art club. And they worked very hard to find a couple property owners downtown willing to let them paint a very small mural, if you will, on their buildings. And so this is one particular example of that, where they painted the shoe on the corner of the building. It is, and it's really fun. I liked the scale of this project because it required you to notice it if you were walking downtown, and so it's something that people will stumble upon and and all of that kind of stuff. And they, you know, the kids went through the process of talking with the property owners and forming an agreement with them and that whole process too, which I will attest was not easy.
Where is that?
The Engen Building.
Yeah.
Right next to Spurs.
It just showed up one day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You can see it from your restaurant.
Well, no,
it's not wrong on the other side.
Yeah. Because we were walking to our car or from our car one day, and the kids, my kids were like, whoa, look at that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Super fun. Pretty cool. Our next artist was John Delgado Maldonado. John is a really cool person. It was really fun to work with him on this project. He did a photo exhibit, which was displayed in the Goodness for quite some time. Is it still there? Hanging up right now? And he did this, he's an occupational therapist by trade from Chile. And he is a very introspective, deep thinker. And so he did this whole photography exhibit talking about diversity. And how we appreciate diversity in so many ways, whether it's heirloom tomatoes or all of the choices of apples we have at the grocery store, all the modes of transportation we have, or all of this different stuff. But that doesn't always translate to people. And so it was really interesting to always talk with him about kind of his thought behind the project. And he actually created a website to go alongside this, and so he shared it with a lot of his colleagues around the world who were checking out the website and kind of interacting with it as well. So it was really interesting. It was fun to see how many people he touched with that particular project. The Dream Technical Academy Charter School in town, Antony Knick, created a little pop-up art shop. So they were playing around with some logo making and some different equipment to create some of those things and have this little pop-up art shop. They were at Wilmer Fest and a couple other pop-up events this past summer. One of our first events that happened, it feels like right away, was Heritage Day with Los Lobos Norteños, and this band lives in the area, but they have essentially won the equivalent of Latin Grammys. And so to have that talent in town, but to not always have a venue or a space or a time for them to be appreciated locally, was really fun to give them that stage. And we celebrated Cinco de Mayo, so this was back in May, at Spurs, and it was really fun to see the crowd. It was quite a crowd that they drew, and it was fun to see that many faces downtown that otherwise would not have been there that particular day. The Welcome Bubble Station that Monica Villers put together, she drew quite a lot of attention of anyone who stumbled upon her little sitting space there. Springboard for the Arts actually came to Wilmer one day this summer for their kind of joint meeting. They've got an office in St. Paul in Fergus Falls, and so they were having kind of their team strategy meeting and decided to come to Wilmer and said, hey, come give us a tour of what's happened so far. And so we stopped here, and they just absolutely adored this project that popped up. This was there quite a bit of this summer. It's down now with intention of going back up next year, which will be fun. But there were bubbles there. There were some chairs you could sit in and just enjoy a sunny day outside. She put together that mosaic totem and had the plants, and there were just lots of fun, colorful, vibrant, visible components. I saw lots of traffic on Facebook of people enjoying it, and it was fun to see the interaction that she gained with that space. Another one of our first projects was the Mother's Day mural by Andres Cabrera. And he painted on the Spurs window, and he made sure to get it up before that Los Lobos Norteños event happened so people could enjoy it. And I think there was a really cool connection between him choosing this location because of the mother-daughter kind of story behind Spurs. And really the whole reason that restaurant began was because of their love for cooking, and so to have a Mother's Day mural on that space was a fun choice of location. One of our last projects that just happened a week and a half ago or so was the Wilmer Youth Experience that Fardosa Ibrahim put together, and she's the director of IFTN in town, which is a small youth organization that she started several years ago. Really directed at helping students with homework, but has really morphed into so many more things. And so she's She's worked with some girls to start this dance troupe that you can see performing in the picture. And they were performing a traditional kind of a traditional song that you would perform and dance to at a wedding, which was kind of fun. And they she put together a play that kind of talked about substance abuse, addiction, which is very taboo in the Somali culture. And so it was a small way of just having conversation, open conversation about that. And we had about 75 people or so there. And a pretty decent mix of people, so that was fun to see. And then there was also some kind of storytelling time at the beginning as well that they shared, and then some henna and some food as well, of course. And that one was held at the Barn Theater, so that was a fun opportunity to kind of walk another organization through how to utilize that space. I thought that space is open for people to rent and take advantage of downtown. Sewing Together was put on by Doris Codgelow and Diane Anderson with the Presbyterian Church. And they put a lot of time and effort into making sure that holding this, basically these sewing lessons in the basement of the church was not going to be a barrier to people participating, and it was not. And to see the relationships that have come out of this project, I think we talked about this a little bit during the City Hall tours, but the relationships that came out of this project were just so unique. They really did one-on-one sewing time with women and anyone who was interested in learning how to sew. And now I see them out and about in the community going out for ice cream or helping each other find a home to live in or different things. And so it was fun to see those relationships develop and grow out of that, and that'll be a project that continues. They bought the sewing machine with some of the money, and then some of the time that they put into actually setting everything up. And so it'll be a lasting project that goes far beyond this month.
So how is that different than the sewing classes that they're putting on at the village?
I don't know if it is any different.
Okay.
I think it's they saw a need to want to connect with more people downtown, especially some of the older women that are kind of in the quilting circle at this particular church, but they wanted to expand who they were reaching with that, really. So, I don't know if it's a whole lot different than what the village does, but cool to see some of that very intentional one-on-one relationship building with that project. Port Sing Long and Community Picnic was kind of a handing off of projects. The American Composers Forum had a resident composer that came to Wilmer over the past year, 2018, 2019. And she was creating songs and writing poetry with all sorts of different groups in town. And this was kind of a celebration of that song and poetry book that had been put together. So there was some drum circles, and the church put on a meal, and then they performed a number of those songs that the community wrote. And last but certainly not least was the Litchfield Flower Space that Ben Larson and Kevin Tuttle put together. And Kevin, one of my favorite memories of this project was sitting down in the Goodness after they had done everything, and we wanted some video. And so we were just talking with Kevin about why he chose to do this and why he chose this location and why they thought of this project for Kevin in general. And they said that Kevin is very, very known for the spaces that he makes, which I think is just fit so perfectly with this project of wanting to create these gathering spaces. And so he loves planting and flowers and all of that. So they created this little space that otherwise hadn't been planted outside of the building that the Goodness is in as well. So it was fun to talk with them about the inspiration behind the project and see it all kind of come to life there.
It was actually full of weeds and the bane of my existence until they did this.
There you go. Solving problems. It's perfect. So We are putting together an open house that will be at the City Auditorium on Saturday, December 7th from 4:30 to 6:30, right between two of the Barn Theater's performances for one of their Christmas plays this year. We are going to have as many of the artists as are able to join us. We'll have kind of booths so you can interact a little bit more closely with all of the projects that happened. And we'll also use this time as an opportunity to start conversation about what 2020 looks like. We've got 1 year under our belt, and we've gained a lot of really cool exposure and experience and excitement around some of these projects, and it's fun to talk to artists about what they would like to propose doing next year that's completely different from what they did this year, and talking with a couple others that didn't participate that would be interested in submitting some project proposals as well. So I think next year will be another fantastic year.
So do you have to apply for a grant again, or is there still money?
No, there's still money. So we'll have $10,000 from this grant that we had this year left. And then the Community Foundation has also granted us $5,000, which still needs to go through council. But they've granted us an additional $5,000 for this same work. So we'll have $15,000 for the artists again.
So any of these programs, can you put in the booklet for Community Ed?
Yeah, some of them were. Well, the one was. The mask-making project was in the Community Ed. But that is one thing that we've talked about, is how do we partner. Some of it is an issue of, you know, the artists, the timing between when they decide what they're doing and dates and getting that all solidified and how that lines with the Community Ed booklet and all of that stuff. But,
so they aren't organized then?
You know, we try to encourage as much organization as possible.
So, how many people are on your board? Did you get
the Wilmer Main Street board?
Yeah.
We've got eight or nine on our Main Street board, and then we've got a subcommittee, which includes a couple of those board members and a few others. So we've got about five or six for Artists on Main Street.
And you meet how often?
The Artists on Main Street meets more as needed. We met a lot, you know, at the beginning planning stages, but once they were in the implementation phase.
But it's not every month at the same time.
No, the Wilmer Main Street Board does meet every month on the third Tuesday at 11, sometimes 3, kind of depends on the month. But otherwise, the Artists on Main Street group does not meet on a regular basis.
Good. Sean?
Can you maybe talk about your selection process of how you chose these ones? Maybe some lessons learned as you go into the next round of doing those?
Yeah. The selection process, we really broke down the criteria of our challenge of creating those gathering spaces, and is it something that they've done before or an existing? We want to see new, we want to see kind of that innovative or visible pieces. So we had some different scoring. John, who did the photography exhibit, was technically on our committee, so we replaced him. There was one small change. We didn't want him to be on the selection committee and submitting a project, but we didn't want to discourage him from submitting a project, so we just replaced that person. They really pushed us to try to award the projects that we get. We were a city that actually saw more applications than any other city had seen. So we couldn't award exactly everything that came in at the dollar amount that they had all requested. So we did have to make some decisions there. But I think overall, the process really kind of came to fruition well. And I think we'll use a similar process this next year, having that committee that selects those and have a kind of oversight of those. I did mention that two applications we received, just the projects just weren't ready. They didn't have all of their partners in place and all that. And I will say, I think the one takeaway from this year is that if a project wants to work with a particular property owner, as much as they can have that property owner on board before we approve projects, the better. Because that was probably our biggest obstacle that we ran into this year.
Well, maybe those ones that didn't get it, will they reapply?
Okay. Yeah, we've had some good conversation, and I know they've been working kind of in the background of getting some of those ducks in a row. So.
Good.
Yeah.
So So is the lady in Granite Falls still in charge of this?
Yeah.
Sabrina?
Yeah, Sabrina is still. She is actually no longer in Granite Falls. She has moved to the Twin Cities for the time being, but still owns some property in Granite Falls, and her family still lives there and stuff too. But she is the coordinator for the rural programs. And then the Winona Main Street director actually more or less was promoted and is kind of her assistant now. So it's fun to have both of them working on this because she's had some experience with artists on Main Street herself. So.
And is this taking up a lot of your time from your...
Once we got everything in order, it really wasn't too time consuming. So it's just the administration of, you know, getting all the checks together and getting all the dates aligned and all of that kind of stuff that took a little time. But once that was all in order, and the second year is always a little bit easier. So.
That's good.
Main Street in general takes up a lot of your time, though.
Yeah. I mean, the agreement has always been that it doesn't take up more than the planning hours that I put in, and planning always comes first, so.
There's no picture of those tiles in here, right? The benches with the tiles?
Yeah, the benches with the tiles is not an Artists on Main Street project.
It's not.
Nope. Okay. That was funded through Blue Cross Blue Shield, Healthy Together, and the Arts Council. So they're still working on some of those. But the majority of the benches are going downtown. They think they're going to have 8 or 9 benches total. And we always invite them to come have tiles for people to paint, because they're always looking for more tiles. So.
Yeah. That's so neat.
Yeah.
So does the newspaper give you space in there?
They've covered a couple of them, yeah. Okay. The Welcome Bubble Station got covered once or twice, even, maybe. They kind of did a pop-up, like, opening of their project, essentially, and so they got covered a couple times, which was kind of fun to see.
I must have missed them.
I saw that.
That happens.
Any other questions? Keep up the good work, then.
Yeah. Yeah, good job.
This is just for information only.
For information.
Okay, thanks. Any new business? Any old business? Any questions?
Move to adjourn.
Move. Thank you.